working on? Cardenas nodded. But what help is that going to be? She shrugged. Leave him alone. While he's pushing down that line, he'll probably come up with one or two other things that'll be really useful. Doug started to object, but Cardenas added, It won't do you any good to try to get him onto another track. He'll just bluster and roar and go right back to what he wants to do. I know, Doug admitted ruefully. Leading Doug to the massive gray metal tubing of the high-voltage scanning probe microscope that stood at one end of the lab table. The two scientists working at the table made room for them. Cardenas peered at the microscope's display screen briefly, made a small adjustment on a roller dial, then turned smiling to Doug. Take a look. The display screen showed a swarm of dots surrounding a flat, grayish thing. The gray material was shrinking rapidly. The dots seemed to be devouring it like a pack of scavengers tearing apart a bleeding carcass. We've revived an old idea, Cardenas said as he watched. Something we were working on more than 20 years ago, back Earthside. Slowly, Doug backed away from the screen and looked into her brilliant blue eyes. Gobblers, he whispered. Right. This particular set is programmed to disassemble carbon-based molecules. Her voice trailed off as she saw the expression on Doug's face and realized that it had been gobblers from her own lab in San Jose that had killed Doug's father up on Wojciechowicz Pass. Oh, she said, fingers flying to her lips. Doug fought the memory. It had happened before he'd been born. He'd been 18 when he finally discovered that his half-brother Greg had used gobbler nanomachines to murder Paul Stavanger. That's all in the past, Doug told himself. Greg's been dead for 7 years and it's all over and there's nothing you or anybody else can do to change the past. It's all right, he said brusquely to Cardenas. It just caught me unawares, that's all. I had forgotten, Cardenas said, her voice low, trembling slightly. 25 years ago. It's all right, he repeated. Taking a deep breath, he tried to bury the past and concentrate on the present. By the time the peacekeepers land, though, the sun will be up and the nanomachines will go into estivation, won't they? We can program a batch to work at high temperature. What about the UV? Cardenas nodded and leaned her butt on the edge of the workbench. It's pretty intense in sunlight, yeah, but I think we can work around it. We don't want a set of nanobugs that can't be turned off, Doug warned. She almost smiled. Scared of the gray goo? Aren't you? Uh-huh. She lowered her head a moment, thinking. Look, when the ship lands, what actually touches the ground? 4 landing pads. They're about 2 meters in diameter and 20-30 centimeters thick. And made of diamond? Doug nodded. Their surfaces and internal bracing are diamond. There are some hydraulic lines inside them. The hydraulics are oil-based? As far as I know, yes. I could check with the manufacturing division to make sure. Okay, Cardenas said, walking slowly away from the electron microscope. Doug followed in step beside her. The ship lands, right? She said, thinking out loud. Its landing pads come down on top of our gobblers. Covers them up so they're no longer in sunlight. And they're shielded from the UV. I get it. Then they can eat their way inside the landing pads and start taking the hydraulic system apart. You got it. Doug broke into a grin, but it faded before it was truly started. Only one problem, Chris. What's that? What good's it going to do us to prevent their clipper ship from leaving the moon? We want to stop them from getting here. Touchdown minus 11 hours, 45 minutes. Zoltan Kadar sat bleary-eyed in the middle of his monitoring screens, almost in tears as he squinted at the drawing of the Farside Observatory. A beautiful dream, he told himself. My crowning achievement. It would be called the Kadar Observatory someday. But it's only a dream. I can't even get an observation satellite to survey the ground. For more than 3 days and 3 sleepless nights, Kadar had hounded Doug Stavanger, to no avail. Most of his calls were intercepted by Ginny Anson, who sternly told him not to bother Stavanger. He's got too much to do, Zoltan, to worry about your satellite shot. Twice he actually got to Stavanger himself by tracking down Doug's movements through the length and breadth and depth of Moonbase. The first time he accosted Stavanger as Doug was talking with the technicians in the control center. Doug listened patiently to Kadar's complaints, then gripped the astronomer's slim shoulder. "Dr. Kadar! Professor Kadar!" Doug almost laughed in his face. "Professor Kadar, I understand how upset and frustrated you must feel, but you're not the only one. All our outside activities have been shut down except for our preparations for defending Moonbase against the peacekeepers. I'm afraid your survey of Farside is just going to have to wait." And with that, a solidly built, grim-faced black man took Kadar's other arm and firmly led him to the door. Kadar glared at him, and when that didn't work, he stared at the man's name tag on his shirt front. "Mr. Gordet," Kadar said with as much dignity as he could muster, "there is no need for you to leave your fingerprints on my arm." Gordet released him. "Sorry," he muttered. "Just wanted to make sure you leave Doug alone. He's got a lot to do, you know." "So I've been told." Late that night, Kadar actually got Stavanger on the phone. If I can't sleep, Kadar told himself, why should he? But Stavanger didn't seem to be sleeping. His image came up immediately on the smart wall of Kadar's quarters. Stavanger was sitting at a desk in his own quarters, wide awake. "Dr. Kadar," Doug said as soon as he recognized his caller's face. "I'm sorry to call so late. It doesn't matter. I was just going over our inventories of supplies." "My satellite is ready for launch," Kadar said. "All I need is your approval, and with all due respect, Professor Kadar, there's no chance in hell of your getting your satellite launched until this crisis with the peacekeepers is resolved."
"It's only one small rocket. They'll see that it's going into a lunar orbit."
"I'm not going to debate the point, Professor. No launch."
"You're standing in the way of science."
Wearily, Doug replied, "Maybe I am. It can't be helped. If it's any consolation, there are a lot of other frustrated people in the base right now. We've got a whole troop of ballet dancers here who can't return Earthside until this mess is resolved." Ballet dancers did not assuage Kadar's feelings, but as he sat amidst his monitoring screens, admiring the drawings of what would someday be the Kadar Observatory on the far side of the moon, he suddenly realized that frustrated ballet dancers might be more appreciative of his predicament than the management of Moonbase. Ballet dancers. Kadar pulled himself up from his console chair and headed for his quarters. A shower, a shave, some clean clothes. If I must spend this crisis in frustration, perhaps there is a charming ballerina or two who can understand me and offer consolation. Touchdown minus 9 hours, 45 minutes.
"I've never felt so frustrated in my whole life." Joanna slapped her palm against the ornate little table that stood at the end of her couch.
Startled, Lev Brudnoy looked across the room at her.
"No one answers my calls," Joanna complained. "No one even acknowledges that they've received my calls. It's like shouting into a deep, dark mine shaft."
Brudnoy turned off the wall display he had been studying, got up from his chair, and went to sit beside his wife. "Fore's people are in control of the commsats," he said gently. "Most probably they are not letting your messages get through to Earth."
"But I've beamed calls directly to the World Court in The Hague. I've even had our own people in Savannah relay my messages to Holland. No response, not even a flicker."
Brudnoy shrugged his bony shoulders. "Fore isn't going to let the World Court consider our claim of independence until his peacekeepers have taken control of Moonbase."
"And turned it over to Yamagata to operate," Joanna growled.
"Yes, I suppose so." Fists clenched, Joanna jumped to her feet and started striding across the furniture-crowded living room.
"That little turd! He's in with Yamagata! It's been a Yamagata operation all along, from the very beginning! They'll end up operating Moonbase under a UN contract, and we'll be out in the cold."
"Expropriated," muttered Brudnoy.
"It's illegal. It's illegal as hell, but he's going to get away with it."
"How is your board of directors taking this?"